The Faction urges you to
This is Neil Scott. How's it going? Welcome to a special Ungagged, in which we'll be giving our reaction to the Tory conference. First up, The Faction and Conservative Friend. Twitter feed erupted in fiery anger. Some people who I knew who were not the usual misusers of the fascist word. Some of my friends use it to describe an awkward waiter or a subway worker who won't mix their roll up in a way that wasn't priced. Anyway, they were applying it to the Tory conference. I thought, how can these people be mistaking the authoritarianism of conservatism for the jackboot? Then I read some of the articles and commentaries released last night and watched video of Mrs. May, and I felt fear. What May was advocating was not full fascism, but alongside measures put in place by her predecessor and the right-wing racist confidence Brexit has given, I am in no doubt that if this government is not confronted head-on, not by some Pinko Blairite notion of opposition, but by truth, by education, and by ripping apart the Daily Hile and Murdoch narrative, what we have witnessed yesterday is the hard right of the Tories becoming proto-fascists, paving the way for the kind of gangs that wandered the streets of Berlin before Hitler's takeover of the government in Germany 1933. Am I being emotive? Am I being melodramatic? I don't think so. I know of people who have worked in the UK for years who are now fearing that they will be uprooted and flown back to countries where poverty, mistreatment or death awaits them. Such is the uncertainty Brexit has brought, and such is the addition of the announcements yesterday that stopped short of angular, brightly coloured badges sewn onto their clothes. T Today, a former no voter in the independence referendum, a long-time Labour supporter and almost Blairite loyalist, contacted me to say if there was a referendum tomorrow, he would be voting to take Scotland out of this union with what could be perpetual and increasingly harder Tory governments. Another colleague, who also happens to be a member of the Labour Party and former no voter, said the same thing to me at work. I don't celebrate them joining the internationalist butterflies because their coming on board really is hard for them. The crumbling of their belief in a UK-wide way to a better, fairer society has been smashed by the racism and the lies of successful governments and the billionaire-owned press. And they're witnessing the machinations of their own party where Corbyn, a man of integrity and truth, is attacked as a liar and some kind of evil anti-Obi-Wan Kenobi. I tend to think the better of people, but a huge proportion of people seem to have slipped into some sort of orthodox unconsciousness. Orwell's description of the party seems to fit in our world of the corporation given ultimate power over our lives. The party nowadays is bigger than Big Brother. It's untouchable and pervades society from top to bottom. Corporate power and profit drives all, and that mixed with right-wing nationalism as opposed to the left-wing internationalist nationalism of the majority of Scotland is a very heady mix. Orwell said in 1984, "In a way, the worldview of the party imposed itself most successfully on people incapable of understanding it. They could be made to accept the most flagrant violations of reality because they never fully grasped the enormity of what was being demanded of them and were not sufficiently interested in public events to notice what was happening. By lack of understanding, they remained sane. They simply swallowed everything, and what they swallowed did them no harm, because it left no residue behind, just as a grain of corn will pass undigested through the body of a bird." He also said, "In the long run, a hierarchical society was only possible on a basis of poverty and ignorance." And scarier still, "If you want a picture of the future, imagine a boot stamping on a human face forever." Unfortunately, the acceptance of the proto-fascism that is governing our thoughts, work and our morality as a nation will poison us all. Anyway, we at Ungagged decided we should put on record our reactions to what is going on in Westminster.
Hi, it's me again, Deborah Torrens from Ogai. I can't even, I'm sitting watching Frankie Boyle for a bit of light comic relief, but pretty much all his jokes are reminding me of this precarious situation we're in. I'm the youngest in a large, close family. My mum is elderly and my brothers aren't far off that themselves. All winky face. We always talk about politics. We're a loud family. We are different generations and even my nephews and nieces join in. We predominantly support Scottish independence, all for different reasons. Right now, my own reasons are to get the fuck out of this insane situation we are in. The Tories are dragging the theory of centre politics to the right drastically. Lists, actual lists of foreign workers by companies as some sort of shaming scheme. Am I in a temporal loop, or is this not some sort of familiar tone of stuff we all sat through in standard grade history? This is creeping fascism. I spoke to my mum at length. She is somewhat of an aficionado in World Wars. She's 75 and spends a lot of time watching the History Channel, reminiscing a joke. She insists, though, it's not really the same thing that's happening here. She told me that fascism began with an existing dislike, a sort of resentment. I asked if it was a bit like how, like I spoke about on my last piece on the podcast, disabled people and folk claiming benefits have been made out to be a drain in society. Sort of, apparently, like how programmes are made mocking these folk, benefit scroungers in the scheme or whatever. But it's still not quite the same. I asked my brother, how can we mock Trump for building a wall in Mexico when the UK is building a wall in Cali? That's not the same either, though. Because we've got to protect our international drivers. Well, British from now on, since it's British workers for British jobs. I had to Google to make sure that was an actual thing said and not just a skit from Frankie Boyle, and I'm somehow typing this while streaming and all of this is just a dystopian nightmare. I'm watching Twitter and Facebook scroll by with casual racism and some total blatant stuff happening. There's a video doing the rounds of wee guys tormenting a poor lassie from Romania. It's sickening. I'm seeing people write about how their spouses and friends are worrying what leaving the EU means for their status in this country they have come to call home. It is so saddening. So I'm sick, I'm sad, and now I'm getting mad. Our United Kingdom leaders, representatives to the world, are standing behind a podium at their conference saying that foreign doctors can stay until domestic doctors are trained and, you know, take their place and then go home. Don't they know that NHS was grown on the backs of Jamaican immigrant nurses and doctors from the Indian subcontinent? Our family topic of conversation switched to slavery. Talk of the unfolding situation in the USA, racial tensions, British Empire. Our whole chat spiralled downwards into a deep depression of acceptance on our impact on the world. When the globe was 75% red of the empire. Old Jeannie was in school in the 50s, the glorious old days. She had a coronation blazer. She remembers workers streaming out of the factories as the loud yard horn blared of glorious labour days. I asked her, "What is Great Britain to you?" She paused for just a second. William Wilberforce, that's who. A great man, born a weak baby to a rich merchant family, well educated and well heeled and kind. He even had sick animals run about his big house. A British man of greatness, who fought for the abolition of slavery across the empire. He met immense resistance and demanded change his whole political career. He died just as the bill was passed. To my mum, this is what is Great Britain. What is the measure of greatness, though? I mean, abolition of slavery is a pretty good one. But today, now, how can we be a great anything when the most vulnerable in our society is still at risk? How can we call ourselves great when our disabled members of society are considered care commodities for councils to balance their books? How can we be great when we are saying to people coming from countries that in the recent past we probably had some sort of interference with, drained them of their resources or simply colonised? Now they are not welcome here on our land. How can we allow programmes to be made that segregate our society by invoking the sneering phrase of scroungers? A sort of Freudian projection by some at the very top of the tree, perhaps. How can the Tories stand there and say that they're going to become the party of the working class? Please, Great Britain, don't buy it. The true essence of greatness is tolerance. My old mum said this is the first thing she would put on a future independent Scotland's constitution. I would add diversity. Tolerance and diversity. The news is on in the background now. I'm listening to scientists worrying about raising borders across Europe. How will it help their research? How will Nigel Farage face coming back onto the scene affect things? Is hard Brexit even a thing? A brick in the face is quite hard. A pillow is soft, but could suffocate you. I'm scared. I keep sighing out loud like, this isn't happening. How can this be happening? We have the fucking internet. How can we know Google stuff and find out what is what? But I still think maybe this is all just a hallucination. I've been reading too much 1984, laughing at Frankie Boyle. Maybe I'm stressed. None of it is real, is it? It's no the same. We're all right. Hopefully I'll wake up tomorrow and we have somehow found some greatness again.
Hi, Eric Joyce here. I've been asked to do 4 minutes on the Tory conference and I thought I'd pick just one aspect. The bit where the Tories say on the one hand they're going for the centre ground of politics and on the other They want the names and addresses of foreign workers and schoolchildren. By the way, I've had lots of calls from media folk about today's events in Strasbourg, obviously. Probably. I don't blame them, of course. It's fair enough, I suppose, but it, you know, I've just skipped through the first line of each message and deleted without answering. But it's impossible to avoid the fact that UKIP have given the Tory right their power over the Tory party. In many ways, what's happened is that the Tory right has mounted a coup and are now acting as the ventriloquists for folk like Theresa May and folk like Amber Rudd. Yesterday, I retweeted a Derek Bateman tweet which expressed surprise, to say the least, that the Tories were being reported by the BBC and others as moving onto the centre ground, while they were also announcing policies which seemed to harken back to worrying historical times. Even as I sent the message, though, I knew Derek had probably already realised himself that the Tories are going for the centre ground because Labour has vacated it, and they're going to get it too. Because the centre ground involves playing to social conservatism just as much as playing to the right does. It's just that folk in the centre ground put their fears into perspective more, sometimes for reasons of decency and sometimes for reasons of self-interest. If you want to win the vote of centre ground England today, and by that I mean if you want to win power in the UK, then you need a story about how migration, or a lack of it, serves regular folks' interests. And while any serious analysis of how immigration affects us confirms that the positives massively outweigh the negatives, folk in the centre are genuinely worried for their jobs, their security, their kids' futures. So with the Labour Party in a mess, and unable to answer that latter case, the Tories, dominated in their fear of UKIP from the far right, are stomping right into that centre ground. They can do this because the right-wing populism is serving both the UKIP-type folks' interests and the folk in the centre ground, as far as public dialogue is concerned. Think of Argentina and plenty of other new democracies. This has happened throughout the 20th century. It's perfectly normal in many respects. It's just that we didn't think we'd see it in the UK in the 21st century. So what of Scotland? I'm not suggesting that immigration isn't an issue in Scotland, but it's clearly not the issue. Scots have to adjust to the world too. It's just that we're obviously doing it in a different way from England and the English. I say this having spent more days in England than in Scotland for quite a bit of my life. The message of the Tory conference this week is based upon the correct assumption by the Tory right that they have control. It has included the grotesquery of a Prime Minister who campaigned against leaving the EU, telling us all how good a decision leaving the EU was, while at the meantime telling us to watch out for immigrants. And basing all of this extremism on the knowledge that the Tories are going to sweep the next UK election because the opposition is nowhere. The simple fact is that both right and left in England have lapsed into harsh and uncompromising ideology. One because they know they can't win the election, and one because they know they can't lose. The simple fact is that UKIP led the Tories and the UK to reject the EU. And this week the Tory conference is all about giving them, those people who reject the EU, the UKIP people, exactly what they want. And what the English want right now collectively is not entirely different from what the Hungarians want. That's the meaning of the EU referendum result. So for Scottish Unionists who aren't Tories and who don't support independence, the question is, surely it's time to at least consider whether being led by an English populist right-wing taking us out of the EU is the right way ahead for Scotland. Just, you know, consider it, maybe. And then, just maybe, decide that it's time for an independent, social democratic Scotland.
Try to understand. I'm Victoria Pearson. I'm a writer and a mother, and usually a pretty placid and laid-back sort of person, but today I am seething. You see, since Theresa May's undemocratic coronation, she's tried to style herself as a centrist, with workers' rights and equality at heart. During the party conference, however, it's become clear that she either doesn't care that that mask is slipping, or, more likely, she thinks that the entire British electorate is as thick as puppy shit. May talks about taking the centre ground while leaning so far to the right that she's in severe danger of falling off the edge. Those that voted Brexit are quick enough to tell us that they didn't do it because they're racist, but apparently the Cabinet didn't get that memo, since May has just announced a host of policy plans that would even make Farage say, now steady on. From the suggestion that we have companies list their foreign workers, to the new Tory pledge that we'll have no doctors come to work here from abroad after 2025, it's quite clear that the Brexit vote has emboldened the Nasty Party to pick up the racist rhetoric that surrounded the campaign and run with it as far as they can. Never mind that our economy would collapse without migrant workers, we'd apparently rather see the UK crash and burn than encounter someone with a different culture to our own. Never mind that the NHS is currently lying on the floor, bleeding out, desperately trying to resuscitate itself while Jeremy Hunt pisses on it from a great height and Branson rubs his hands in glee and works out his projected profit margin. We're going to make the NHS staff so demoralised that they all quit and move elsewhere anyway. Hunt seems to think that we'll be able to stop British-born doctors leaving for a country where they're valued and respected, but short of building a wall, it's difficult to see how. Only please don't say that too loudly. Theresa May's about two drinks away from suggesting it herself. They already came for the disabled when they cut ESA. They came for the poor when they cut universal credit. Now they're coming for immigrants. You'll probably be next, unless you happen to be in the top 1% of UK earners. If you are, well, lucky you, you'll be getting a tax break. We've let them cut Sure Start, libraries, local council budgets, housing benefit, nursery placements, adult literacy programmes and firefighters. We've let them expand the cruel and counterproductive badger cull. We've let May organise Brexit talks in secret, giving us no voice in exactly what Brexit will look like, with no intention of any kind of public consultation. We've sat here and listened while she talks about repealing the fox hunting ban and describes ideological austerity as living within our means. She's done all of this in our name, securing the knowledge that she can do just exactly as she likes for the next 4 years, more if the weighted constituency reshuffle goes ahead. After all she needs to do is make a couple of pitifully weak jokes in PMQs, and her BBC lapdogs will slather all over her shoes and hump her leg, yipping, "You really showed Corbyn there," whilst they desperately try to kick Tory election fraud under the carpet. Probably the most frightening thing to come out of the Tory party conference so far has been May's utterly barking plan to repeal sections of the Human Rights Act. Universal human rights are just that. Universal. They are not May's to grant or take away. They are ours. We have already fought for them and we won. Who is she to try and take them from us? The Tories have spoken about how our troops should be exempt from those pesky human rights violations trials, their argument being that vexatious claims are sometimes made and those cost money. To which I say, so fucking what? On that basis, we should scrap all court cases of any kind because vexatious claims are sometimes made. Correct me if I'm wrong, but isn't the point of a trial to get evidence heard and the facts established? We are at war on more than one front, and we already have shockingly high levels of sexual assault in our armed forces. Do we really want to rip up the rulebook entirely and give our boys the right to torture and rape with impunity? We have rules of engagement for a reason, and if we continue styling ourselves as the moral arbiters of the world, we have to hold ourselves to the highest possible standards. The thing that's always made me proud to come from the UK is our freedom and our tolerance. Britain has always been, despite the rose-tinted nostalgia glasses you can pick up at the Tory Kip conference, a melting pot. We are a beautiful mixture of Vikings, Romans, Asians, Celts, Africans and Europeans. We are all races and all colours, coming together and finding common ground side by side, enriched by our diversity. We may not dress the same, or eat the same things, or have the same faith even, but we all wait in line at the post office, we all tut but don't make a scene, we all talk only about the weather. We're all just neighbours, wherever we come from. We live and we let live. We are a pirate culture. We travel the world and we bring home new foods, new languages and new people. We do not stand for this kind of division. 80 years ago, the Jews stood side by side with the Irish dockers and the communists and the socialists and the working class people at Cable Street, and we told Mosley's filth that in no uncertain terms they shall not pass. We will not have fascism in our streets, and we certainly will not tolerate it in our government either. People talk about sleepwalking into fascism. We've gone beyond that now. We have a government who, even if every charge of election fraud is thrown out, still only achieved 24% of the vote, led by a woman who wasn't even elected by her own party, and they are talking openly about making lists of foreigners, giving soldiers permission to violate human rights in combat situations, to strip human beings of basic fundamental human rights, their very personhood. They are talking openly about making universal human rights removable, effectively telling you that the rights you already have can be taken away. Best behave yourselves then. Toe the line. The Tories have used Brexit as an excuse to go full fash. They think that if they point the finger at migrants enough, the electorate will just forget all about Cameron's £10 million plane, Sam Cam's £30k a year stylist, and the massive pay rises for MPs, and the £6 million a year House of Commons bar bill, and the fact that actually, it isn't migrants that have put the NHS under pressure, it's massive cuts and unworkable contracts and chronic neglect. It isn't migrants that are stopping your kid getting on the housing list, it's Tories not building any social housing. Your wages aren't low because of migrant workers. They are low because the Tories have kept the minimum wage low. The Tories have allowed corporations and individuals to squirrel away wealth in tax havens instead of paying you what you're worth. The Tories aren't investing in your community. While they continue to live a champagne lifestyle, people are relying on food banks. In one of the richest countries in the world, we are told that we can't afford care for our elderly, emergency services, healthcare, housing, social services, prison officers or pensions. The Tories genuinely expect us to believe that all that's the fault of migrants. That's how stupid they think we are. I refuse to believe that the majority of British people are racist, xenophobic knuckle-draggers who will believe whatever they're told by their Tory overlords. I refuse to believe that the majority of people listen to Murdoch's hate rags spewing their bile about migrants as if the 2008 banking crash and subsequent chronic mismanagement of our economy never happened and actually buy into that. I think better of us than that. I'm sure even the people who voted to leave the EU didn't want our human rights taken away, foreign citizens monitored, and our NHS closed to international health professionals. But that's happening in our name. The Tories think that's who we are. That's how low they regard us. The Tories have allegedly rigged the election, then taken us out of the EU by accident. Now they're very deliberately stripping our rights as quickly as they can strip our kingdom's assets, stirring up hatred for immigrants while segregating children by wealth and giving poor children the choice between a life of fruit picking or a chance to be cannon fodder in the next unwinnable illegal war, and they do it brazenly. Without shame, in our name. I wish I could see a happy ending to all of this, but with both Trump and Le Pen gaining ground and May kicking off the vile kitten heels to strap on jack boots instead, the future is looking a lot like the past we swear every November we will never forget. 2016 has taken some unpredictable swerves, but I never thought I'd end up being nostalgic for Hammerin. To the people who voted to take control because the EU is, air quotes, undemocratic, I need to ask, is this what you had in mind? Really? This isn't control, it's mayhem. It's fascism. It's not us. I refuse to believe it's us. I want my democracy back.
Lumbering onto stage like some mechanical scarecrow, our unelected Prime Minister delivers a lecture that is all Britishness, Brexit and immigration. Yet the only element in her speech worth noting was the line, "Doing what we believe to be right." And Amber Rudd's pronouncement shows this to be factually true. Because whatever sprinkling of quasi-left or centrist policies they espouse, their willingness to slow march into a right-wing racist future must have the EDL fearing they'll be made politically redundant, and UKIP looking like the voice of reason. Rudd said she chose her words carefully when airing her immigration policies and spectacularly obnoxious proposal that companies should have to expose the number of foreign workers they employ, after which it must be presumed we name and shame them, hold them up as pariah businesses, as not being our kind of company. So God help the NHS. And where does this logic take us? Should they be forced to reveal how many overseas companies they deal with, or foreign-owned British companies, or even UK businesses owned by British immigrants? She would have been better to have chosen no words and remained silent. Because once spoken, they cannot be unsaid. Whether or not this idea comes to fruition, it seeds the ground for bigotry. For when those at the apex of society air their fetid thoughts in such a divisive way, it opens the door on intolerance at the bottom. There is a magnifying effect, and these effects are wholly negative, as we have seen post-Brexit. Although perhaps we shouldn't be surprised, for the Tories are the party of educated extremism. In recent times we've heard David Cameron, when PM, complain of a swarm of people coming across the Mediterranean seeking a better life, wanting to come to Britain for jobs. A line of conversation that eerily echoed Hitler's words in Mein Kampf when he wrote of the promiscuous swarm of foreign peoples which began to batten on the old nursery ground of German culture. But then, we do employ a foreign secretary in Boris Johnson who, if not racist, is an inveterate bigot. A man whose offensive utterances have somehow not prevented him entering one of the most powerful offices in the country. This purging of the foreigner now entered the realm of education, where complaints that overseas students are given too generous a visa deal, in that their immediate family members can both accompany them and work in the UK, is fixable and on the Tory to-do list. That these family members are their spouse and children, not third cousins on their father's side, is never mentioned, nor the reality that most students are young and unmarried, and that any money they earn is taxed, and that they spend their income in the UK. Of course, this is also to ignore an economic truth, in that international students bring in an estimated £8 billion a year to the economy, paying tuition fees that are often three times those of British students, get no assistance from the state, and that this income provides roughly 30% of revenue for British universities. Rudd's further assertion that there should be a tiered visa system, where the so-called best universities get the most generous visas, and the rest will get a sliding scale, depending on the quality of the education offered. It's an elitist policy that could threaten the very viability of regional colleges, who rely on the income from international students to help them provide higher education in places off the beaten track. Establishments that allow poorer students to study from home and thus diminish their end-of-course brass handshake from the loans company. And of course, she never mentioned the elephant in the room. Overseas students in private schools. Students at the Independent School Council estimate make up almost 21% of the private school population. But to have followed such attack would have been to open a Pandora's box for the most ardent supporters, and that certainly wouldn't do. So what are we to make of the Tory Party conference? That their centre-ground rhetoric is underpinned by a core of right-wing policies, policies that will resonate with the extreme right, whilst adding new layers of disaffection and intolerance to society. The cognitive dissonance at work as every Tory suit making a speech throughout the phrase of a country that works for everyone is almost as ridiculous as Theresa May's attempts to woo the working class.
On October 4th, 2016, Theresa May delivered a message to British businesses declaring that she's putting companies who behave badly on warning lists. These include companies who hire foreign workers rather than training young people who were born and raised in the UK. Brexit Secretary David Davis suggested the government could compel businesses to offer jobs to British workers before being allowed to employ migrant ones. The Cabinet Minister outlined how the possible introduction of work permits to control migration could include tests that force firms to prefer Britons over foreign nationals. Speaking at a fringe event at the Conservative Party conference yesterday afternoon, Mr. Davis said, quote, "Typically, the way a work permit works in other countries is you've got to say, have you tried to get a British citizen first? And if you haven't, then you have to do that first," unquote. What's more is Britain's government now plans to shut the door on international students and foreign workers, announcing a harsh new policy preventing overseas workers from, quote, "taking jobs British people could do," unquote. Under the Conservative government's plans, students and skilled workers from countries including New Zealand, Australia, and Europeans convicted of minor crimes will be targeted as part of a tough new stance on migrants. Next up, Home Secretary Amber Rudd has announced that from December onwards, landlords renting out properties to illegal immigrants will be committing a criminal offence and could go to prison as a result. From next autumn, banks will also have to do regular checks to ensure that they aren't providing essential banking services to illegal migrants. Money drives behaviour, says Rudd, and cutting off its supply will have an impact. Anti-immigration rhetoric is the theme of the 2016 Tory conference. Migrants have been targeted from all corners. The government plan to bully businesses into favouring British workers over those from overseas, normalise discrimination within the employment process. Overseas students and workers will have the doors closed on them, limiting our country from taking on future workers and those wanting to learn all because of their place of origin, whereas banks and landlords will be pushed to investigate and refuse services to those who will be forced further into the shadows of society. In relation to this last point, forcing potential illegal immigrants further out of society won't serve in forcing them from the country, but will push them further underground, increasing the likelihood of them turning to crime as a means of existing. It shall also impact those who are living here legally, as they will be treated as constant suspects and potential liabilities by landlords and banks terrified of being branded a criminal. The Tories are trying to condition our society into forcing those not born within Britain from earning a living, making it increasingly difficult for them to contribute to society. Their aim is to ostracise and prevent foreigners from the freedom to exist and live in these lands, attempting to force them out one day at a time. The message? If you're not British, you're not welcome. You're below those born within Britain and potential criminals who should be investigated from all angles. Leave and please don't return. The country you were born in and the race you belong to will determine whether you're allowed the same rights and freedoms that those who've lived in Britain their whole life take for granted. Immigrants have been persecuted, victimised and pushed out of society by those up top. If we continue to allow this hatred, then xenophobia shall continue to rise. Ethnic minorities will be forced into a life of unemployment, find it ever more difficult to open bank accounts in their names due to lengthy investigatory procedures, own homes for themselves and their families, study within our education system, contribute to our society and inevitably be exorcised from the United Kingdom one day at a time. Theresa May and her government appear to be dehumanising immigrants, promoting the idea that those not born within Britain are less important than those who are, treated as though they are unwelcome parasites who are potential criminals and don't deserve the same quality of life, all because of the geographical location of their birth. The further dehumanisation will continue to fuel hatred toward ethnic minorities, violence toward immigrants shall increase, and countless individuals will become homeless. Many will suffer. In a globalised world, Britain is closing itself off, descending into a land fuelled by ignorance, ran by a party intolerant of those who've come from elsewhere and determined to favour some citizens over others. If we want to live in a country that boasts of its tolerance and equality toward those of all backgrounds, then we must put a stop to this hateful insanity. We can't continue to pride ourselves on providing equal opportunities for all if we allow our government to determine people's employment, housing and liberty based on their ethnic origins. It's vital that we step up and oppose our government's xenophobic attitudes, because Britain may well soon enter a dangerous period if it's not careful. If we don't stand up now, the suffering, hatred and bullying shall continue to grow, just like it has done for many years now. Britain could very well lose itself, becoming nothing more than an ugly island hidden away from the rest of the world. If we allow this to continue, we will fall behind, and everyone shall suffer as our economy, culture and society succumb to the vile acts of bigotry.
An address to the Conservative Party conference. by Crispin Mephistopheles. Thank you. Thank you. I see the hope and the expectation in your eyes. I also see the fear and loathing in your eyes. And I like that. A heady mix of bafflement and prejudice, a potent heady brew indeed. Breathe it in. All of you, just take a moment now and breathe it all in. For here, here is where fear reigns, and hate is offered up to fill the yawning void. I look at you, each and every one of you, currents of confusion buzzing and sparking across your baffled eyes, like a strip light shorting, sputtering and flickering, as you try to grasp the scope of the great betrayal by the spineless, gutless, clueless fucks who came before with all that one nation shite. Oh yes, we can forgive them their offshore tax havens. Hell, given half the chance. Am I right? Am I right? But let's be honest here. Those Eton boys, they let us down. I mean, let's get real. Let's get mean. For 6 years, we have demonized, and I use that word advisedly, the feckless spongers, the layabout disabled, and the benefit cheats and shirkers. But now what do? We shamelessly declare ourselves the party of the workers. And my heart swells with pride when I witness a copy of the Sun newspaper folded upon the dashboard of a builder's van, or the Daily Mail brandished by an immaculately manicured hand. Ah, the Daily Mail, that crack cocaine for the home counties. How their lips will twitch with sweet indignation when once again we redirect the anger of our nation towards immigration. For hear me now, I am the morning star, come to guide you down a cul-de-sac and foreclose on all your dreams. But first, I make you thirst for your own enslavement and fetishize your own entrapment to forge your own mental chains and wall up the doorway to your heavily mortgaged cave. Oh, but my heart swells when I witness the division of humanity along imagined demarcation lines, and it fairly bursts with pride when the greatest shift of wealth is presented as prudence by my Nazi paparazzi lapdogs. Austerity, it didn't work, we now discover, but only because the Labour Party blew our cover. But we have other plans. So much more to plunder. But you still cannot comprehend, can you, my poor blind children, locked in as you are to your processing plants and your pension plans, ever applauding these party stooges with the finest propaganda served up to you by my own unfair hand. And yet despite all this, you will one day honour me. Yes, with a horse-drawn ticker-tape parade through your blasted, wasted cities. And I, with mock humility, will take the plaudits with aplomb, casually tossing infant livers for my accompanying hounds to chew upon. Thank you. Again, thank you. And now, before I make my way, I am very humbled to present to you my very own Theresa May.